This is Digital Story Podcast number 938, March 12, 2024. Today's theme is So Much Photography News This Week. I'm Derek Story. Nikon buys Red. Lens Rentals gobbles up borrow lenses. The Princess of Wales gets caught with a sloppy Photoshop job. And a lot more. What a week in the news. So much so that we are dedicating this week's podcast to the breaking stories in the photography world. Stay tuned. I hope you enjoy the show. So I was just amazed at how much is going on in the world of photography this week. I absolutely love it. So many stories. So I follow stories all week long as I prepare for the podcast, and I mark the ones that I think are interesting or potential candidates for the show. So, you know, and I just keep a separate Safari window with tabs, you know, so the tabs have all the stories that I'm sort of thinking about for the next episode. So I'm kind of, you know, doing a tab here, doing a tab there. So today, when I sat down to start writing the show, I was going, oh my God, I got like 8 tabs of stories. And I go, I think that is the story, right? All of these stories are the stories for this week's podcast. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to jump in. We're going to talk about Nikon acquiring Red, Lens Rentals. We're going to talk about the Princess of Wales and her brutal Photoshop job that she got caught with. We're going to talk about the Oppenheimer cinematographer. We're going to talk about Leica's new camera. The Nikon Z9 is going to the moon. I mean, there is just a lot of stuff going on. So I think what we'll do is let's start out with Nikon to acquire Red in a surprise announcement. Now, this story is on fstoppers.com. And what I've done is I put the link to all the stories in the show notes. So you can go back and read the entire story or see what's going on, any links that are in the stories, all that sort of stuff. So I have all the stories listed in the show notes. You just click on them. All right, let's start out with the first one. I thought this was really big. This was a bold move by Nikon. Let me read you a little bit about what F-Stoppers has to say about this. In a surprise announcement, Nikon announced that they are set to acquire U.S. cinema camera manufacturer Red, with Red due to become a wholly owned subsidiary of the Japanese camera giant. This will surely make Nikon a force to be reckoned with, not only in the photography world, but also in the filmmaking world. It's no secret that Nikon has been behind their rivals in recent years regarding video. Sony, Canon, and other manufacturers have long had strong video game in the hybrid space, but Nikon just could not seem to find the balance until recent years. The launch of the Z8 and Z9 has seen a massive improvement for Nikon, and combining that with the acquisition, Nikon could be onto a winner. The move is still due to be finalized, but everyone anticipates that it will. So, Red was founded in 2005 and is based in Foothill Ranch, California, with approximately 220 employees. Red's cameras have been used for a vast range of high productions within the film, TV, and documentary universe. A few examples of such productions are The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, Jurassic World, The Amazing Spider-Man, The Falcon and the Winter Soldier, The Boys, Frozen Earth 2, and Limitless with Chris Hemsworth. That was a documentary, that last one. With just a few examples named above, it's clear that Red is no slouch in the cinema camera world, and there are many more amazing productions that even I wasn't aware of. This could be very exciting for Nikon shooters going forward, especially if you love to shoot video. I love this acquisition. I think it is really smart. You know, Nikon has not been bad at video by any stretch of the imagination, but they just haven't been the one where, you know, you go, okay, I'm a video shooter and I'm a photographer. Which camera should I get? Probably Nikon is not going to be the first thing that comes to mind. It's probably going to be Canon or Sony or Panasonic, right? Something like that. That might change very much with this move that they've made. And I think this just puts more fuel on the fire. I'm very happy about this. I can't wait to see how it plays out. Nikon and Red are going to be working together now. This should be a lot of fun. So what I'm going to do right now, I'm going to a photographer story that is a bit of a follow-up to the original story. The original story is that Lens Rentals has purchased Borrow Lenses, and they're just going to mash up into one company. Originally, the reporting was going like this, that Lens Rentals was going to get inventory, and they were going to possibly take over some of the offices, and they were possibly going to absorb some of the employees from Borrow Lenses. However, a little while after that announcement, that original announcement, then it came to light that, well, maybe some of the details weren't quite right as they were being reported. So this story here, actually, Lens Rentals won't be acquiring employees from Borrow Lenses. This is on the Photographer. I have the link in the show notes. Let me read you what they have to say. Previously, the Photographer reported that Lens Rentals purchased Borrow Lenses. However, we also reported that they'll acquire the Borrow Lenses locations and employees. That was based on information that we had at the moment, which wasn't clear. However, it turns out that this won't be the case. Lens Rentals provided us with a quote on what's happening. So here's that quote. Here's that statement. Quote, while Lens Rentals is not acquiring employees or locations as part of the acquisition, we did acquire the Borrow Lenses brand and select assets, said Tyler Beckman, Lens Rentals CEO, in a statement to the Photographer. Quote, we will bring the Borrow Lenses assets under the Lens Rentals brand, expanding our customer base while growing our inventory of pro-grade photo, video, and cine gear and accessories. We also set up a transition page to help former Borrow Lenses customers onboard to Lens Rentals, end quote. Essentially, Lens Rentals bought the brand and the entire inventory. One can make an educated guess that this also means that the customer data is also transitioning, but the employees and the locations aren't going to Lens Rentals. And that was reported in a couple places over the last few days. So this consolidation, and that's really what it is, makes a lot of sense to me in terms of market, because there's probably only room right now for one major outlet for used gear. Now, I mean, we know that there's all sorts of other outlets that aren't as big as Lens Rentals, for sure. And they're probably all doing fine because they have niche audiences or they have loyal followings. However, when we talk about the big one, there's probably only room for one big one. And it looks like that Lens Rentals is going to be it. Now, it's unfortunate that employees and locations aren't coming along with it. I was sort of excited about the locations because it's great to be able to receive your borrowed lens, your rented lens via shipping. However, it's even cooler if you have somewhere around you, one of the offices around you, where you can just go get it and then just take it back. I much prefer that to shipping. So I thought that the expansion of having locations where those exchanges could happen was really a neat idea. And I'm sorry to hear that that's not going to be happening as part of this deal, because I sort of envisioned that this physical network would be growing as well. And that's the thing that I miss the most these days, is very few physical locations you can go for photography purchase, photography rental, you know, all that kind of stuff. So this is a big consolidation in the rental camera market, and we'll see what happens. I'll keep following the story. I went to amateur photographer for this next story because they are based in Britain, and it just seemed like a good place to go for the title, Edited Royal Family Photo Sparks Major Controversy. And boy, did it. Let me read you a little bit about what amateurphotographer.com has to say about this. A lot of photographers will use editing software when it comes to portraits, and nobody usually minds much. But the latest picture of the newly recovered Princess of Wales with her children has not quite gone to plan. The image taken by Prince William was released by Kensington Palace to mark Mother's Day and the Princess of Wales' recent discharge from the hospital for abdominal surgery. The photo was widely published, but then questions about its authenticity started to be asked. No less than four top international photo agencies, including the Associated Press and Reuters, later withdrew the image, issuing a dramatic-sounding kill notice. Quote, at closer inspection, it appears that the source has manipulated the image, a spokesperson for the Associated Press told The Telegraph. Quote, the photo shows an inconsistency in the alignment of Princess Charlotte's left hand. AP has examined the picture, and an area shows that Princess Charlotte's sleeve isn't quite in line with her hand, and there's also a slight ghost outline of her cuff. This is consistent with the published photo being a composite of two frames which have been combined together using photo editing software such as Photoshop, presumably for no other reason than to make sure everyone has a perfect smile at the same time. This editing is entirely understandable in a portrait for social media, but clearly didn't match up to the strict standards press agencies require for news photos. After Kensington Palace was accused of failing to respond to the fast-escalating story, the Princess of Wales later confirmed in a tweet that she had edited the picture. Quote, like many amateur photographers, I do occasionally experiment with editing, she said on X/Twitter. I wanted to express my apologies for any confusion the family photograph we shared yesterday caused. I hope everyone celebrating had a very happy Mother's Day. It was Mother's Day on Sunday in England. If you're confused about that, it's not the same date, obviously, as it is here in the States, which is in May. All right, back to the story. Decoding this, the message seems to be, quote, I'm only an amateur and I don't do editing very often. But still, the image was presented as an official, hence the massive interest in the story. It will also doubtless feed a lot of unhinged conspiracy theories about the princess's actual health. The Daily Mail, for instance, proclaimed, the palace can no longer be trusted, which seems to be something of an overreaction to some ham-fisted photoshopping. The Princess of Wales is a keen photographer and was named a patron of the Royal Photographic Society in 2019. In future, she may wish to check out AP's in-depth guides to photo editing that we have linked here. All right. So, wow, so much has been made of this story. My gosh. I looked closely, and there were actually a number of little mistakes made in the editing process. None of them really jump out at you. However, they're there. It's a family shot. It's the princess with her children, and it's a lovely shot. I actually think William did a very good job taking it, and I think all she was trying to do was just make it look as perfect as possible. Looks like taking a little bit from one frame, adding it to another frame. I'm sure there's no intent of deception other than just a mom wanting her family to look as good as possible. But the thing is that the way that it was released as an official photo, that's where it kind of got a little sticky. So I feel bad about this whole thing. I mean, we have so many deep fakes and so many wild things going on right now with photography and video and voice that this, in comparison, seems very small to me. I hope the story blows over soon, and I hope we can get back to examining some of the other deep fakes that are out there that I find far more troubling. Oppenheimer cinematographer urges filmmakers to shoot on analog in Oscar's speech. And this is an article from petapixel.com. I have a link in the show notes. I watched the Oscars last night. I'm recording this on Monday, and I watched them on Sunday. And I thought it was a pretty good show, by the way. And there were just enough surprises to, keep us on our feet. It was pretty entertaining, well-produced, and some good speeches. And one of the good speeches that I thought was interesting was from the cinematographer for Oppenheimer, who did win an Oscar for his work on that very, very good film. He gets up there, and one of the first things he does is tout celluloid photography. Let me read you a little bit about what Petapixel says here. Oppenheimer cinematographer Hoyt Van Hoytema urged aspiring filmmakers to shoot with old school film formats in his Oscars acceptance speech. Hoyt won the Academy Award for Best Cinematography for his work in Oppenheimer, beating out the likes of Maestro, Poor Things, and Killers of the Flower Moon for the accolade. Oppenheimer is his fourth film with director Christopher Nolan, following their collaborations together on Interstellar, Tenet, and Dunkirk. As he took the stage to accept his first Academy Award, Hoyt began his Oscars acceptance speech with a shout-out to the film format. The cinematographer encouraged striving filmmakers to shoot with celluloid, the old-school format favored by traditionalists such as Nolan. In his speech, Hoyt praised film for being visually superior to digital cameras, while adding that it's not as difficult to operate as some may think. Quote, "To all aspiring filmmakers out there, I would like to say, please try shooting with that incredible new hip thing called celluloid," Hoyt says in his speech with a chuckle. "It's much easier, they think, and it makes things look so much better." Film fans and photographers alike took to social media to praise his shout out to celluloid in his acceptance speech at the Academy Awards, with many agreeing wholeheartedly with the cinematographer. Van Hoytema wrangled a huge IMAX camera favored by Nolan to film Oppenheimer, from the famous explosion scene to some of the epic three-hour movie's most intimate moments. As well as Nolan's beloved IMAX format, Van Hoytema also used a Panavision 65mm camera favored by David Lean for the 1962 movie Lawrence of Arabia, using color and black and white, the latter requiring Kodak to manufacture a new film stock, especially for Oppenheimer. The Eastman Double X black and white film in 65mm was specifically created by Kodak for use with the IMAX and Panavision System 65mm film cameras when making Oppenheimer. The cinematographer said that he and Nolan were stunned by how beautiful Kodak's newly manufactured film stock was. Quote, "We'd never seen anything like it. Very special, very beautiful," he says on Kodak's website. "Although I shoot a lot of commercials using digital cameras, I still believe the film is more engaging to watch and much closer to the human visual experience. There's still nothing that beats the resolution, depth, color, and roundness of the analog image, nor the feeling overall that film conveys. When you watch an analog print, especially in an IMAX theater, the level of impact is freaking inspiring." He should know, right? I mean, this guy definitely knows what he's talking about. By the way, the other movies that he's made, and if you have seen, for example, Dunkirk, it's just amazing visual experience, especially if you get to see it in a big theater. I did get to see Dunkirk in a big theater with great sound also, and it was super impressive. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. There were causes that people spoke about in their acceptance speech, stuff going on in the world, personal journey, all sorts of things last night. It was really fascinating. I always like hearing those speeches, but this guy used his capital to talk about film. I gotta admit, that's pretty cool. Has Leica just made its best camera ever? This is an article on Digital Camera World, and I have a link in the show notes. Leica has just launched the camera I've always wanted. The Leica SL3 is like nothing else out there. It's a powerhouse full-frame camera with a 60-megapixel sensor, 8K 30p video, face detect autofocus, and an app that downloads images to your phone in just seconds. The previous version, the Leica SL2, was a tough sell. While it was a beautiful camera, it had an uncomfortable amount in common with the Panasonic Lumix S1R, not least the sluggish contrast-based autofocus system. However, the new SL3 remedies both of those points by being technologically unique and introducing hybrid phase detect AF, which means its substance is now in line with its style. You can read my Leica SL3 review for my full thoughts on the camera's performance, but we're looking at a real monster in terms of spec. Its triple resolution sensor offers 60.3 megapixel, 36.4 megapixel, or 18.5 megapixel shooting to accommodate your workflow and output needs, with dual basis ISO that covers ISO 50 to 100,000. The body is fully weather sealed with an IP54 certification and works in temperatures as extreme as 14 degrees Fahrenheit to 104 degrees Fahrenheit, making it a legitimate professional tool. In fact, Leica told me a story of a shooter in the Arctic who was shooting at negative 58°F conditions and the camera was still working. Plenty of improvements have been made from the Leica SL2, including the addition of a tilting screen, the physical buttons being shifted from the left of the rear LCD to the right for one-handed operation, and the addition of a CF Express Type B slot to complement the SD card. And for anyone who beams photos straight to their phone for editing and sharing, the Leica Photos app has been radically improved, now offering ridiculous speeds. It can transfer a 60 megabyte DNG file via Wi-Fi in 2 seconds and via cable in less than 1 second. This is a big deal for me personally, particularly given how bad other brands' phone apps are. The Leica SL3 is available now, priced at $6,995 for the body only. What a camera. And it's beautiful. I'm looking at pictures of the camera right now. I love the design. It is gorgeous. The lenses, of course, are fabulous. Now, I was just thinking, you know, you can get this full-frame camera, a body and a lens, probably around $10,000. It's about the same as if you want to go Hasselblad for medium format. You're shooting with a Leica that really seems like to have really come together for this particular camera. It won't be a camera that I'll ever own. But for the moment, I'll just have to read these articles and just look lovingly at it. But I would love to shoot with one, and I'm really happy that Leica continues to push the ball forward. I read a separate report the other day that their sales are very good, that their bottom line is very healthy, and they just keep rolling. They just keep rolling. So anyway, this SL3 looks like an absolute beauty. Nikon's Z9 is slated to go to the moon in 2026, and this is on dpreview.com. I have a link in the show notes. Before I get to the story itself, let's talk about pronunciation, right? So, first of all, Nikon itself is said basically two different ways, Nikon and Nikon, depending on where you reside. And then the Z is said two different ways as well. In the U.S., most people say Z, so it'd be the Z9. And then in most other parts of the world, they say Z9. So it could be the Nikon Z9, the Nikon Z9, or any combination of those two. I'm going to mix and match. I've gotten used to saying Z9 because that's the way I hear the Z, and I have a ZF, so I'm just saying, look, I've got to stick with one way. But I still say Nikon and not Nikon. So however I'm mishmashing this, if it drives you nuts, I apologize. It is not a winnable situation for anybody who is saying these things out loud. All right, so we're going to go with Nikon Z9 for this story. Here we go. The Nikon Z9 is going to the moon. NASA has selected the high-end Z9, one of the most complete cameras we've ever tested, as the official handheld camera for the Artemis 3 mission set to launch in 2026, give or take, which will put astronauts on the moon for the first time since 1972. But it won't be your average Z9 that makes it off-planet, as one might expect. The Z9 will be heavily modified to handle both the rigors of space travel and life on the moon. Nikon and NASA are redesigning circuitry to prevent cosmic radiation from damaging the camera, and a new grip is being added with special buttons for common controls so astronauts can operate it while wearing gloves. Custom firmware will modify noise reduction, HDR features, menus, file numbering, and more. Several Nikon Z lenses will be modified to cope with the surface of the moon. The end result is a device that NASA calls the HULC, Handheld Universal Lunar Camera. As NASA notes, it's a huge leap forward from when Apollo astronauts used viewfinderless large format film cameras that were attached to their spacesuits at chest level. My question about this is, okay, 2026, and you know, based on the last module we put up there that landed and then promptly fell on its side, you know, I'm thinking that 2026 may or may not happen for getting people up there again. The camera world is going to have moved on quite a bit. I mean, we're in early 2024 right now. So I'm just thinking, wow, all right, kind of cool, yay. But at the same time, can you imagine the astronauts going, hey, could I have that, the newer model, that latest one that came out? Because it has dot, dot, dot. But I guess you just have to plan way ahead for these things and just put a stake in the ground and just go for it. At any rate, it's going to be on the moon whenever that happens. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to thank our Patreon members, those who are part of the Inner Circle, for supporting this podcast month in and month out. They have their own site where they hang out. Over on Derek's Story Online, they have their own space, and they also receive discounts on all of our workshops for 2024. A big thanks to our Patreon members for supporting this show, and a shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. They have a bounty of information and knowledge waiting for you on their site. And lucky for you, they have a tile that's on every page of the Digital Story. You just click on it, go over there, nose around, get some paper, learn a little bit about the printing process for your particular needs. And that's what they do so well. They provide information that's helpful for what you want to do. Make some prints, show them to some people, and see what folks say. They're going to go, wow, that is absolutely beautiful. You're an artist, aren't you? And you know what? You are. Think about it. If you took the shot, if you processed the shot, and if you printed the shot, that is artwork. That is artwork from start to end. And Red River Paper can help you do the best job possible, can help you bring the magic of your work forward and put it on beautiful paper, all sorts of different stocks. You got to go over there, see what's going on, and start some inkjet printing on your own. And a huge thanks to Red River Paper for sponsoring this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.